Dude, I gotta wash my Charizard again tonight, train him, and feed him. Damn it.
In tech, we trust. Charge we're not sure about.
Hello everybody, welcome to episode 96 of the In Tech We Trust podcast, and we are 1, 2, 3, 4 Oh, that's me as well. We're four, right? So we are Yadin. Look, I don't need to say your surname anymore, do I?
No, you can just use my first name. It's fantastic.
I've got that down though.
Yeah, and so fortunately Mark's not here to try and reintroduce my nickname.
I didn't hear last week. Go on. Tell me.
Oh, that's good. No, not going to repeat it. If Mark wants to come on next week, that's his charge. If he wants to tout it, he's got to be on the show.
So did he put it on last week's show?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, okay. So I've got that saved up because we're flying to the States on Thursday. So I'm going to listen to the podcast on the flight.
Oh, perfect. You're going to have to come down to the valley.
Must be present to win.
Right. Hey, anyway, speaking of which, we've got Carlo Van Sexrun on the line.
How you guys doing?
Good, yeah.
Yeah, I've been on a world tour, so you know, trying to keep it real.
We've got Rickatron as well. How do?
Hey, I'm joining from far away. I'm in St. Petersburg, Russia tonight.
You are not.
I am. I'm staying up for the show, guys. I wouldn't miss it for the world. I apologize that I've missed a few episodes. You guys will get a chuckle out of this. My beloved Surface RT 2 has died, therefore I have to travel with my real computer. That's one of the reasons I'm on the show tonight.
Good man. Hey, you've been on the podcast before from St. Petersburg, though, I'm sure, because you told us like exactly what latitude and longitude it was.
Oh yeah, the two interesting stats that St. Petersburg, Russia, I might have this right or wrong, but nonetheless is what I'm saying, is the largest city in the world with the northernmost largest city in the world is one stat, and the largest city in the world, or something like that, 5 million people or more, north of 60 latitude. So two interesting stats there. Northernmost largest city in the world and largest city in the world of more than 5 billion people, something like that. And it's around 60 degrees latitude. We're just past the white nights here. It is midnight, and it is properly dark, but it didn't get properly dark till about 11 local time here.
But have you saved anyone out of a river? That's my question.
Oh, you heard about that. No, that would have been a Hans special. You know, that's reserved for the IT Hulk.
That's the Rasputin rescue.
Yeah, I'm just working on backups, man. I keep data alive. That's what I do.
All right, then, shall we get onto the agenda? So this is what we've got, I think, like a packed show this week, right? So not angels, but drones are about to start landing on church steeples. We've got drones delivering Slurpees. Somebody's going to have to tell me what a Slurpee is in a minute, as well as hot coffee. We've got laser-powered internet, driverless cars saving lives, the end of Yahoo as we know it. Although I think actually the end of Yahoo as we knew it was freaking ages ago. We've got Salesforce buying like 100 legacy VMAX on-prem arrays. Azure revenues are up 100% year on year. There's been an outage at Southwest Airlines. And oh, so normally we chunk this up as like tech news and business news. I don't even know where to put this, right? But there's a reinstated fatwa on Pokemon in Saudi Arabia. So stick that one in your pipe, everybody. Woo! Right. Can we talk about drones, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
So the two main stories that we've got are that Amazon's been awarded a patent to start landing drones on, what is it like? Well, anything that's high, yeah? And then is it 7-Eleven over in the States have started delivering stuff through drones? Yadin, I know you've got stuff to say on this.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited about this. Though I think 7-Eleven has the advantage over Amazon. But just to kind of go back a step and talk about what Amazon is looking at doing, and that's putting drone docking stations on lampposts, church steeples, cell towers, anything high so that they could recharge and then go out and deliver more packages. One of the things that they're trying to do, too, is make this sort of a feel-good infrastructure public service and offer free Wi-Fi as a potential part of these docking stations. So there'll be docking stations plus free Wi-Fi hotspots. So in addition to delivering your packages and knowing everything about, you know, you and your buying preferences, they'll also be able to collect any amount of data that you happen to be, you know, using or consuming or creating, you know, on one of their free Amazon Wi-Fi hotspots. It's just part of the Amazon Big Brother plan.
It's not a docking station. That would be a stalking station.
Yes.
That's an expensive cost of goods sold to pick up a user. And what's the return on investment look like for that?
True, yeah.
It's one thing if Chick-fil-A spends, you know, the cost of a chicken sandwich to buy, you know, give everybody a chicken sandwich to download their app. It's another to give somebody a piece of physical hardware that you need to support.
Legitimate municipal infrastructure. Yeah, but you know, you could also make the case that they're piloting the concept here. This is very limited to a part of Nevada, northern Nevada, Reno, not a huge city. It's not like, you know, New York City has 7-Eleven airborne Slurpees right now. But, you know, the thought is get this concept right. But I really like this idea. But the altitude, the charging, the stocking stations, all these different things are good ideas, but I think that there is a significant infrastructure cost. But, you know, maybe this paves the way for like the proverbial internet tax and more to kind of pave the way for that.
Yeah, I think a lot of companies like Amazon are really going to be the ones that bear a lot of the burden of a lot of these things that need to get done that used to be done by sort of monopolistic cable companies. Now are being done by like monopolistic, you know, internet giants like Amazon and Google putting in fiber, putting in Wi-Fi hotspots in municipal zones. So I think that's just part of doing business. And like you said, it's going to be piloted in these certain places. Not everyone's going to get Wi-Fi hotspots everywhere, but the first ones that opt into this are going to get the benefits of that sort of onboarding program. And then the rest of the people are just going to, you know, the rest of, I guess, the different municipalities are just going to, you know, are going to get these, you know, with maybe something else to grease the skids, maybe not Wi-Fi hotspots, but going to be something else. But Amazon's going to be the one to do something like that if something like that's going to be done.
Yeah, they're like the new utility, to be honest. I mean, it's, you know, it used to be you leased your phone from Ma Bell. You didn't have a phone in your house. You got one from the phone company. You know, a rotary phone that came with the line and everything else like that. I mean, I could see this as partly something of that kind of, you know, nature where they're kind of facilitating the utilization of the service by putting the product in the house, even if they don't charge you for it. In the long term thing, you know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to shake out in terms of drone commerce.
And those Bell phones were indestructible. Did you ever try and take one of those things apart?
They are the bomb. In fact, I have one at home just in case because it's the only phone that works when the power's out.
Just in case what? Somebody tries to rob you, can belt them over the head.
No, if you lose power, your digital phones are worthless.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But your old Ma Bell phone is analog and it'll still work.
Yeah.
Hey, so with this whole drone thing and Amazon and what have you, who do you think stands to benefit the most out of this? Is it Amazon? Is it, you know, cities and municipalities, or is it us as end users? Because, I mean, look, I love Amazon Prime. In fact, I needed to order a new pen for my Surface Book because I lost mine and I wanted to get it like tomorrow. So, the day before we fly, right? And it's great and all, but I don't know that, you know, having drones deliver, I mean, what do I actually get that's a better experience than somebody knocking on my door and giving me a package? I mean, can you get it to me any quicker? It just doesn't sound like it's for me.
It's 24/7 without human intervention.
What, so I could get it like 2 in the morning?
I don't like people. I'm sorry, yeah. But I don't want undesirables.
Nobody likes people.
Yeah, I hate everybody. And I don't want undesirables showing up at the crib, you know. So I actually have this weird thing. I won't even get pizza delivered at home. I will get my full self in the vehicle and go get it and bring it back. I just don't want people coming by.
The case in the Rickatron house.
Nah. The problem is, Rick, I tell you, all I do is we just send the security guards out to the end of the lane where the gate is to it. No, I'm just kidding.
Do you have to put the drawbridge down over the moat to get into the castle? Yeah. Is that how you do it?
Hey, I do have a question though, right? From a technology perspective, right? What do we think is the biggest barrier to adoption of this, right? Do we think that it's going to come down to cost? Because there's going to be significant infrastructure investment needs to be made here. Do we think maybe it's like the range of drones and things at the moment, as in how far they can fly? I'm just trying to get my head around, like, because it feels like it's kind of early days and that getting patents is one thing, but maybe we're a few years away from this being like, you know, proper mainstream and, you know, we've got drones whizzing about all the time overhead. I'm just trying to wonder, you know, what do you think is today the biggest technical barrier?
you're laying the groundwork the same way that we're laying the groundwork for self-driving cars. You know, there's going to be this 3 to 5 year period where things get shaked out. I mean, if you don't start doing it and testing it out and getting a feel for what the logistics are around something like this, it'll never come to fruition. It just so happens to be that they have a vested interest in being first to market with it and then, you know, working it all out. I think the bigger challenge will be, you know, standard logistical things like, you know, carry weight, weather, FAA regulation.
Battery endurance.
FAA regulations will probably be the bigger challenge than anything else. Think about how many drones will be in the air.
Burn
how much
strikes.
Competition. Yeah, how much competition for airspace delivery, right? Well, I mean, you always see the video of, like, my favorite is the movie The Fifth Element, right? When you see Bruce Willis driving this kind of, like, you know, city cab that floats, and, you know, he has to drive through parts of the city, and he's dodging, like, you know, 10 million vehicles. Is that what our skies are going to look like with these drones eventually? Or is it going to be like the Jetsons where it has to get into this kind of path, you know, the drone path, or even Star Wars? I mean, we've seen it happen in a million movies where the air car is flying around. You could easily reach saturation points and then, you know, communications and all kinds of other little logistical issues that can pop up.
Yeah, I think the competition piece was like the most key component of what you were talking about. And that, I think, is for two reasons. One is that they want to create a moat effect and they want to be able to have IP protection and also be first to market, like you said. And so they want to create a platform. And I think there's actually a great deal of opportunity where lots of people have taken advantage of Amazon platforms, from fulfillment to AWS. And I think if they can be first to market with creating a drone delivery platform, this will be something that anyone else can consume and use. And drones, you know, can be used for a whole host of things by consuming an Amazon drone infrastructure. I mean, who's the one who first created a first East Coast to West Coast network of gas stations so someone could actually drive across the entire United States? Amazon is going to do that for drones. They're going to actually create a network, not just logistic, but, you know, not just physical infrastructure, but also the technology in order to coordinate that kind of traffic to go from one side of the nation to another and do a whole host of things that we can't even think about right now.
Cool. Hey, let me just twist it onto a slightly different angle, okay? I guess it's kind of topical at the moment, right? Sticking with the drones, right? What's the negative or the downside to this? Like, I'm thinking, you know, as soon as the skies get really busy and effectively drones can fly anywhere that they want, what about terrorism? What about privacy? What about people snooping on you, just your neighbors? Maybe you're about to have like an Amazon delivery and it crosses your neighbor's yard and he pulls out his shotgun and blows it out of the sky, and then you've got a neighbor dispute and somebody killed somebody. Don't get me wrong, it's morbid, right? But, you know, whenever there's anything new like this, we tend to have to go through these like kind of the teething process where it's really painful at first and it gets abused. And, you know, we've already had people, I think it was over here in Europe somewhere, where they landed a drone in the middle of a football stadium or a soccer stadium. And I think the game got abandoned or something, and it was worried that it was a terror attack or something. Do we have any thoughts or any worries about stuff like that?
Absolutely. And I should maybe another time tell my personal drone crash landing situation in the grumpy boat cabin neighbor situation that I had one time. But my personal drone, you know, landed out of range, and the neighbor got really concerned. And, you know, I'm a almost 40-year-old guy saying I felt like the kid that threw the ball, you know, through the window.
Yeah.
But this is absolutely a real concern, and it's going to amplify. It's going to, you know, imagine a drone with a heavy matter crashing into a stadium, you know, because interference takes over and it loses logic and, you know, goes into a public crowd, maybe the medicine doesn't arrive, or, you know, those types of things can actually happen. I think it's a legit concern.
EMP strike kills all drones in the sky. They're falling everywhere. It's a drone-nado.
Honestly, there's going to be a movie about it, isn't there? Angels and Drones.
Oh, yes.
If there isn't already a B-movie somewhere on the internet.
I guarantee that there's the drone of death, a death drone, drones from above. I mean, we could go there all day.
But, you know, the 7-Eleven story, too, just to pivot on that really quick, and I'll explain what a Slurpee is to you, Nigel, in just a second. But I think it's really interesting that it brought up a really good point, that you know, Amazon is coming up with this patent so it could land drones for recharging. So it has to do these on all these high towels. They don't have like retail stores all over the place like Barnes and Nobles or something to land drones on top of. But 7-Eleven has almost 11,000 stores across the U.S. And so if somebody wanted to do something like this, and you know who would be perfect, even more so than 7-Eleven, Starbucks could do this. If they wanted to spin up a drone service, they have tens of thousands of locations where they could just stick a drone charging station on top of or next to a location and be able to then spin up a network way faster than Amazon could if they got the proper approvals, simply because they have the footprint and they have the delivery and distribution infrastructure already in place, whereas Amazon's got to go back to a large distribution warehouse, which is why they have to make all these charging stations to begin with. But if something like a 7-Eleven or Starbucks wanted to do this, and 7-Eleven obviously already is, then they've already got a much faster distribution. Now, they're not going to be able to, you know, deliver all the stuff that Amazon is, but they're going to be able to serve a niche that Amazon just won't be
able to. This is the new trace route. When you do the trace route command, you see all the 13 different hops to go from here to wherever on the internet, all the different Starbucks or 7-Eleven rooftops that your drone is going to hop through. That's really the new analogy here.
Yes. And if you could set a Pokemon lure at one of those trace route points, then we've got a solution and a good partnership there.
Do you think it's about time that or do you think the time is right for Starbucks to then pivot their business and provide drone infrastructure as a service? And is it going to be like 10, 15 years time and our kids are like, what, Starbucks used to have coffee shops? They're like the world drone giant.
Have you seen the movie Idiocracy?
No.
Oh gosh, you have to watch that because that's what Starbucks is going to become.
Oh, right, okay.
It's not child friendly.
And that's the fun part, is that we don't know what, you know, who's going to end up in that drone giant. It could be Amazon. It could be 7-Eleven. Wouldn't that be amazing if 7-Eleven been, you know, the drone giant, and then Slurpees, you could be delivered anywhere at any time. And it's hot over here where I'm right now. And oh, I would actually like a drone to come to my house right now and deliver a Slurpee, for your knowledge.
Puppy, how about misery? What is one?
It's like an ice blast or a slush puppy.
There you go. No, it's like a slushy.
Yeah,
slushy. Oh, okay. I could nail one of them right now.
Mm-hmm. That cherry. It stains the mouth all day long. You look like a Mentat.
So over in the States, is the raspberry flavor always bright blue?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the unnatural color. That could be any flavor. Blue can be anything.
I did have one point about the whole leveraging of Starbucks and some of these infrastructure, you know, these companies as infrastructure pivot points, right? Think about any city in the United States, how many Starbucks there are. I mean, there's many places where you see a Starbucks across from a Starbucks, right? And it's all about, you know, the mathematics that go into store placement. And McDonald's was kind of a pioneer of one of these, right? McDonald's used to take an airplane and fly over cities and take photographs, and then they would use game theory to determine the proper placement of a McDonald's based on income and foot traffic and all types of things. And Starbucks and those guys, they use satellite imagery to do all that stuff. They're going to inject all that kind of information and data into, you know, hotspot placement or drone delivery placements. It may be just the drone delivers something that's close enough to you can just walk over to it real quickly. And that's the one thing. You can have a drone collection center where it's within, you know, 150 feet of you in a major metropolitan area instead of coming directly to your house, which
like
is still much
box.
More convenient. Yeah, it's like a red box. I mean, it's like I used to work in the .com days. I worked for a company. We were going to build kiosks that you would stick in every Starbucks that would deliver will call Ticketmaster stuff, or have, you know, point of sale things for like FTD for flowers and things of that nature. It was always the concept of piggybacking on somebody's already installed infrastructure in order to get a service in there that people wanted. Obviously, you know, our phones have made most of that stuff obsolete, because now everything is just a scan ticket on your phone screen. But, you know, just interesting concept of there, how we can leverage already entrenched facilities to enable or empower a business.
Well, it's just like Amazon Web Services, isn't it? That was born out of, you know, they had Amazon.com with a bunch of spare infrastructure. Like, well, what do we do with that? Well, it's the same deal, I guess. Starbucks have got all these properties in key locations in strategic, you know, cities and things like that. What can we do with them? How can we further leverage them? Why not? What the hell? Yeah, cool.
One of the flaws I see, though, in the plan, though, is For example, this
there's no plan.
Yeah, this Flirty, this company called Flirty that 7-Eleven is using to create its drones. One of the key things that they called out is that they were the maker of proprietary packaging and containers for drones. And I think the real winner, I think, is going to be somebody who leverages it, whether it's Amazon or somebody else, who actually creates that standard container for whatever you're going to ship. And any drone can pick up the standard size container. Whoever patents that and gets the distribution for that, they're actually going to be the real winners of all of this.
We kind of have that in the UK already, because I ordered a micro SD card for my new phone that I bought the other day. And honestly, it's like the size of a thumbnail, right? And it came in the usual standard brown Amazon cardboard box that you could fit like a big fat science book in or something. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
And tons of bubble wrap.
You know where the disruption is? It's in packaging. Man, I'll tell you right now, my house in any given week is a brown cardboard village, right? Because so much stuff I get from them. They can't, you know, they're still working to get this, you know, all the things. I mean, half the time you order something and like they can't bundle it all, right? And or they're still working on some of that. But it's just so massively wasteful how much cardboard goes into the Amazon vehicle. Right.
So, Elricotron, come on. You're like a former logistics expert. You love the logistics industry, right?
I want biodegradable air packaging.
Instantly biodegradable.
That very well could be part of the drone thing that saves on stuff. If the product fits into a standardized plastic container or some kind of container for delivery, and you just open it up or you leave it there for retrieval.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's where it's like, all right. And you look at the margins in Amazon margins for, you know, their point of sale business, you know, their stuff are very slim. We're talking same or close to what Walmart has. If you can make up 2 points, you know, just packaging costs alone, that's a huge, that's 2% of the, you know, billions of dollars of business. Right.
Well, the real innovation is going to come for, stocking station handover. Okay, so the packaging and containerism, that's very important. But what you're going to want to see is a drone be able to carry more than one target at once, right? So think of the base concept of a semi-truck with a bunch of stuff that goes to a lot of different places. If a drone could carry 4 deliveries, 4 of, you know, Nigel's SD cards, and then it can go to the stocking station, distribute some, and then the next drone come and pick that up, it only have to go 1 or 2 clicks rather than the whole 15 clicks of the distance, time to market, energy used, better efficiency, better, quicker delivery times. I think the containerism and then bundling, consolidation of transport, you know, that's I think the innovation, and that's all big data of sorts. It's all intelligence on the systems that are in place. Container is very important. Weather is going to be an important factor because this is generally not an exposed or not an enclosed transportation technique. Granted, the drones probably wouldn't work in all weathers. They, you know, that might be something to consider in regards to service levels. But I think that the real-time tracking, that's a natural demand from the consumer. Where's my box? Where's my Slurpee? They're going to say those types of things, right? So the data is going to have to transmit down to the phone, trackmyslurpee.com, whatever it is. But container consolidation, delivery efficiency, that's what's going to make the difference.
So I'm calling a stop to this, and not because we need to move on, because I think between the four of us, we've got the next big business idea here. And we're giving it away for free. What are we doing? What the heck? Anyway, I'm just kidding. Right. So what have we got else on the agenda? So Facebook are looking to reinvent lasers. Now, I've got a question around this. I don't really want us to spend much time on it, right? But they're kind of reinventing or tweaking lasers and capturing the beam at the other end and what have you to bring high-speed internet out to the boondocks where it's really difficult, you know, to like plumb cables and stuff like that. Cool. I love the idea. When are we going to get handheld proper laser guns that when you fire them at people, make them like evaporate and disappear like you used to get in the old Star Trek films?
I just want a stun gun, you know, for people that are annoying me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it always had a stun.
It doesn't need to kill them. If it can stun them, they can lay on the ground. That would be great.
When is that coming? That's what I want to know. That's where the innovation needs to be. Anyway. let's pivot, actually. I want to talk about this Salesforce buying over 100 all-flash VMAX arrays. Didn't anybody see that coming? I'm quite astounded because we've talked recently about, you know, Salesforce have got their own kind of in-house cloud. They recently pushed a bunch of new business ideas out to Amazon Web Services. They seemed to be, and don't take this the wrong way, okay, but a forward-thinking, cloud-first approach company. And they are, well, over 100 VMAXs, and I don't know what it was, somewhere there was, I think it was the register, they were citing 50 data domain boxes as well. That's like some serious cash to lay down on traditional on-prem. I mean, how do you manage 100 VMAX arrays?
With Viper!
Anyway, no. Rickatron, you're in the data protection business, right? How do you manage something like 50 data domain arrays?
Well, you know, you're going to need people. You're going to need applications that move data. You're going to need a lot of people looking after this. Now,
it's all old school, though.
Well, it is, but you got to think about a lot of Salesforce. And now I'm going back to interpreted logic. One of the best bloggers I know who, you know, William Lamb now at VMware, you know, everybody knows he used to come from Salesforce. They had a huge footprint of stuff that ran on VMware. And honestly, in the era of cloud stuff, it's basically OSs on infrastructure, and storage like that would be in use. So I'm not exactly surprised at the amount of that, considering like everybody uses Salesforce.com. So if you think about that, might not even be enough, honestly. So I don't really think it's that shocking of a number. If you think about the size and depth, the amount of customers, the amount of data that Salesforce are providing. And then let me twist it a bit. What if some of these cloudy services go tits up? Where are the data lakes that, you know, really drive these services? I think it's going back to stuff like this.
I think you just swore. Cloud services are magic, Rick. They don't go tits up. I mean, come on.
Hey, I've got – I log into Salesforce all the time about scheduled maintenance. Not all the time, but frequently. Oh, yeah. It's in off times. There have been outages, but maybe, you know, they're very limited. Speaking of outage, unlike that big one with Southwest Airlines here in the States.
Oh, let's do it then, because I don't even know anything about this. There was an outage at Southwest Airlines.
Yeah,
big one,
right? I know all too much about it.
One of the biggest airlines in the world. Now, here's the thing. I am not directly connected to too much of it. Now, Gabe and I found out the same piece of information as the root cause of this problem, and it's generally related to networking. We'll just leave it at that. Not our infrastructure, not our problem, but it was big. Four-day
– blame the network.
2,300 flights canceled, a significant outage, and it was really a problem. And there's a legend in aviation circles. I'm a big-time junkie on airliners.net, and unconfirmed, but one of the reasons that Southwest Airlines in the States, when they first started way back in the day, one of the reasons that they never had seat assignments or like a premium cabin was their monster of an application, one of those homegrown specials for the ages, okay? It didn't understand the concept of like seat assignments, and it didn't have a construct of a different cabin. So that's why they never did it, believe it or not, as far as I know. That's the legend, okay? But getting access to this flight dispatch system and more was a real problem, and it was in the height of summer. It was really rough domestically here. How do you know so much about it, Gabe?
Because my flight was canceled twice. over a two-day period of all places, right? So we were supposed to fly back from San Francisco that, I think, Thursday evening. That flight was canceled. They got us on a flight the following morning, which was canceled. We didn't even know that one was canceled, so we showed up at the airport. Then they're like, well, yeah, the next one's the following day. And I'm like, I pulled a full-on, like, hissy fit. And my wife's, was much more level-headed than I was. And I'm like, you know, about to strangle someone. And she's like, you know, is there some other flights? We ended up having to fly to a whole other airport and then rent a car and rent the car to drive home. You know, like, just, I still haven't even contacted them about reimbursement for all the additional incurred expenses, because they weren't giving you anything at the time, right? They weren't covering hotels. They weren't doing rent. You know, they didn't even offer anything.
You got a refund though, but
actually I didn't get a refund.
Are you serious? Yeah, my colleague was there. She was flying to L.A., and it was like 6, 7 o'clock at night. She ended up having to get a car. In the end, didn't get to L.A. till like 3 in the morning. She thought they were going to get there like at 7:30 at night. 3 in the morning after multiple cancellations. And, but she got offered a refund on the spot and also compensation for like 50% off her next flight.
Yeah, I did get an email like, here's 50% off your next flight. But they still charged me the same fare. In fact, they tried to charge me more points. Because I did it on points. They tried to charge me more points for the return flight because it changed. And I'm like, but this is on you. And then they took all the points out. It was just, I swear. I mean, at one point I had like 400,000 Southwest points. That's how much I was flying Southwest. And I've always had good luck with them, you know, and I actually love their model. I don't care about first class and that crap. Half the time, if I'm flying Southwest, it's because it's only 2 hours I'm going someplace. Right. And I can change the flights. There's a lot of flexibility. As a business traveler, it's a great airline. But for service, it kind of sucks. And so, you know, there are no bells and whistles. There is not a lot of redress. You know, you can walk up the counter and an agent won't even bother to assist you. It's like they'll point you to the little kiosk and you plug your stuff in. I think what you saw here is there was a huge reliance on those kiosks and those self-service terminals, and then when all of a sudden when something didn't work out, they actually had to bring agents up to the gates and the windows, and they had to do the job they used to do. They were so out of practice, and that it was a nightmare for everybody involved. It was just a really bad experience.
But let me just try and boil this down, right? Because we've had a bit of a slagging match, or we've slung mud at their app, but their app or their homegrown application wasn't what was at fault here. It was a network issue. Which, what, did we suggest it wasn't even their network, it was a third-party network?
Yeah, but I think the big issue was that after the network caused it, that their backups failed.
Yeah, I didn't hear about that part. But,
No. But the situation is that it was very clear that there wasn't handling for something like this, disaster recovery. There wasn't a way out of a complete domain of failure. Now, that being said, I don't have experience at app and infrastructure of that size. I mean, they're a big airline, a lot of data, but I'm just saying if it's important, it needs to be available. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we just did a podcast on SocNet about disaster recovery, and they could have used some of Howard's advice.
Couldn't we all?
DR. Test your backups.
What's more than that? It's design an app that you can ensure is available, right? So why go into something that you can't make available? And that's the biggest risk with the cloud era. You say, oh, cool, I'll do that. But what if that doesn't work? Then you as a company that is providing something that is powered by IT are on the hook to do it. So don't do it if you can't make it available. I mean, it's that simple.
Let's pivot real quick. Sticking with business news, Verizon to buy Yahoo, $4.8 billion. I think 8 years after Microsoft tried to buy him for like $48 billion or something. Nope.
Someone's kicking themselves.
Do you think?
Well, I mean, you know, it's an interesting thing to see, you know, the evolution of Yahoo as one of the kind of the initial first tech darlings and first web purveyors and into a content generator. And it definitely fits into the Verizon strategy, you know, with them buying, they picked up AOL and got a bunch of content in there. I think it's interesting to note that they will be diversifying out the investments in like Alibaba and some of the, in Yahoo Japan, which Yahoo is still big in Japan, to use a phrase no one has ever used.
Hey, just to be clear, Gabriel. So, the investment that Yahoo has at the moment in Alibaba and Yahoo Japan are not part of the deal.
No, they're not. They're going to be spun out into a separate company that will be publicly traded. It also excludes some of the patents and Yahoo's cash, which is interesting. So, you know, that money will be leveraged something else, and then, you know, they're targeting 2017 there. You know, I mean, interesting move for Verizon as they look to shift and adjust their focuses as well. I think a lot of these large organizations that have a lot of infrastructure and a lot of access to, pipe, are looking at ways to deliver content as well as an alternative revenue streams. you know, it's the same thing with the consolidation of the cable companies as well into these giant media tech global companies, right? And, you know, on the Yahoo side, it's the diminishing value of a brand. I mean, their sales, I read one article that showed their sales were down like 20%. You know, and under Marissa Mayer's, you know, stewardship over the last 4 years, they've not done very well. And so, you know, it's kind of one of these things where it's like,
mildly, Gabriel, come on.
Well,
don't hold back. Come on. And they've
it's
tanked.
It's been a quick and steep downhill slog. And in the last three quarters alone, it's like, you know, it's down 12%, 15%, 20%. You can't, you know, outside of a public firing, which I don't think that they were going to do ever, you know, it's really hard to maintain those losses over time. And it's, the brand has been diminished. It's not, it doesn't have the same value as it used to. And so, you know, in that respect, it's struggled. And this is what happens when you can't make it work.
You know, what surprised me was actually that the deal excluded some of the patents and also excluded Yahoo's cash. Like, if you're going to buy a company, you don't get – some of their patents are excluded. Their investments, lucrative ones, are excluded. Their cash.
It could just be that, you know, there could be some legalese in there about who really legitimately owns a patent.
Oh, yeah. There always is, but
does anybody think 4.8 billion is a steal, though? I mean, they've got over a billion active users, right? Surely you can make money out of that in some way.
So what's that, what, like 90% of those are bots?
Well, I mean, I'm putting it in marketing terms. That's like, what, $4.80 cost per lead?
$4 a person.
Reasonable.
Yeah. $4.80 a person. I mean, that's actually, you know, if you're buying that kind of access, I mean, you think about it, it's Tumblr and some of these other properties that are still get high traffic. But, I mean, monetizing those things, I mean, who thinks that, you know, Verizon is going to be able to monetize it any better than people who were part of the product from day one in many
respects. Does it include Flickr?
Is Flickr still around?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's very active on the photography community. Probably one of the best. I mean, that might be worth something.
Hey, one last story then to wind things out before we potentially do a hot or not, right? Why are all these tech giants fighting the US government over email snooping, right? Because Microsoft are in the news again. They've got this like really bitter war going on with the US government over giving access to emails based outside of the US, but that are to do with US citizens and national security and stuff like that. And I kind of tip my hat to Microsoft and to Apple and the other companies that are fighting the good fight, if I can say, right? But I want to know, why are they doing this? Like, are they just on like some kind of higher moral ground, or I don't know, what's in it for them? Because surely there's risks in going up against the government so blatantly, right, or not?
Well, everything's built on trust. And I think if you lost trust, I mean, people have a certain expectation in certain platforms that all their data is being shared, and they've agreed to do that. But then there's also certain venues that rely completely entirely on trust that this communication is encrypted, it's not being reviewed by anyone they don't want it to be reviewed by, and it's able to get to the other recipient without, you know, privately. And that's across a whole host of products and services. And if they can't ensure that, it undermines their entire revenue model in certain segments, and therefore doesn't really allow them to operate with any integrity. And when you're a salesperson walking in, you know, when you're trying to sell some product, and you're like, you know, and your, you know, competitors are, you know, throwing this FUD at your client saying, nope, you know, hey, I heard, you know, the government can, you know, see all your emails. Not that this is unique to Microsoft. It is, you know, it's across the board. And I think everyone fighting it is right to be fighting it, simply because that if you can't have private citizens be able to use platforms and have some expectation of privacy, you know, during certain types of transactions, then, you know, then how are you going to operate?
So it's not just purely that they're looking out for their customers. They are, but indirectly, because they're looking out for their own business models at the end of the day, which is to be expected from a business, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so interesting show so far. Let's try and wind it out on this hot or not idea. So I don't even know what to say about this, right? It's been in the press recently that in Saudi Arabia, they have reaffirmed an old fatwa against Pokemon, right? Apparently, not particularly Pokemon Go, but I guess it's reared its head again because of Pokemon Go. But Pokemon in general, What did they say? It was like it encourages sinful behavior.
Right, there was
behavior.
An original fatwa on this as well.
Oh yeah, it's like from 2006 or something.
Yeah, it's been around for a decade.
So it uses iconography and stuff from other major world religions. And apparently it encourages sinful behavior. So anyway, details aside, okay, I want to ask the question, fatwas, hot or not? Who's going to go first? I'm just going to go from the top here on my screen, actually. So Yadin, Porta de Leon, you are, unfortunately, you didn't breathe, but you are top on my list on Zencast.
I was holding my breath.
Sorry,
Nigel. No, I would say mildly interesting, but definitely not within the hot category. I think it's interesting that, you know, that an organization or you know, a non-secular entity like Saudi Arabia would actually issue a religious ruling on a specific branded type of activity, like, you know, or an entertainment brand like Pokemon, to specifically deter people from using it because it promotes the wrong type of behavior, gambling, other sinful behavior, etc. And I would, you know, personally think that the individuals participating in, you know, in that particular country, you know, who are, I'm sure, very, you know, very intelligent, reasonable people, I'm assuming, would on their own be able to make the determination that Pokemon either is within or outside of, you know, of their beliefs. And make that determination themselves, or leave it to, you know, to individual, you know, sort
you
of
help,
religious rulers to make that ruling, but to actually create a law. It's like having a law here saying that, you know what, you know, Pokemon Go is bad and you shouldn't do it. Therefore, we're going to make it against the law. And, you know, it's a $75 ticket. If
you don't think
you
it's like open to abuse, right? Like economically as well, to say, all right, well, you know, we've got shares in such and such, alternative, let's issue a fatwa against this and force everybody else to use Alibaba instead of AWS. Totally is.
No, there's nothing financial around any of this. This is pure religious edict based on shaping and forming behavior for specific regions where the Stone Age is considered a little too modern.
Well, that's interesting because you're making like an unintended swipe at me there, because I did consider earlier today when I was wondering whether I should use this as the hot or not idea. My like kids, they can't stop watching this program called iCarly, and there's another one. And it's like it's mindless drivel. And I'm like, I should have a family fatwa against all the drivel that my kids watch. And, you know, my wife said, she said, don't be silly. It's just like, I don't know if any of you guys remember this. Do you remember Saved by the Bell?
Yeah, that was like a classic in my childhood.
Screech.
Screech. I remember seeing a commercial for it.
Were you Screech?
No, hey, come on. I was AC Slater, the muscly guy. No. but my wife's like, don't be silly. It's just the same as Saved by the Bell. So I was like, oh, okay. Maybe no family fatwa against iCarly or whatever. Anyway, let me move on. So, Gabriel, come on. Give me a hot or not. Ice cold. Yeah. El Ricotron?
Not hot, because you know what? Pokemon is ridiculous. Period. No, it's absolutely ridiculous. The game, a couple people I work with walking around doing this ridiculous crap, and I'm like, what in the world? And they explain, it's Pokemon Go. And I'm like, that's just stupid. So by principle, the whole game's stupid. So in a sense, I'm like with them to ban it, I guess, is what this is. But
so you think hot.
Oh, it's not hot. It's just ridiculous. Period.
So let me finish the podcast on this, right? And I want absolute honesty here, gentlemen. Who has got or who has used, tried, tested, played, maybe even addicted to Pokemon Go? And I'm going from the top again. So, Yadin, that is you first up. Have you even installed it on your phone?
No, I have not. But I have seen a video of somebody else playing it. That's as close as I've got.
That's okay. Rick, not Rick. You're not next on the list. Come on, Mr. Gamer himself, Carlo Van Sexron there.
I have not played any Pokemon Go.
I don't believe it. No, mate.
And I have no intention to do so, because I looked at how evil the data invasion was. There's already enough of me on the internet. I don't need any more. you know, there's some really paranoid people out there that are like, oh, well, it's taking pictures inside your house, and Google's going to have a scan of the inside of everybody's home at some point, and, you know, all right, fine. We already know Google is evil. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, I just don't have time to do it. I mean, you look at the
issue.
I'll tell you, in the first, I've worked Pokemon Go into some of these presentations I'm doing lately in terms of like next generation data center and digital transformation and application delivery type things. And, you know, for me, the part that was more impressive was the fact that in 3 days it overtook Twitter, and that people were spending 43 minutes on average on Pokemon Go. That's like they're doing $6 million a day in revenue.
You know, my favorite part, though, was that the Nintendo stock crashed once investors realized that Nintendo didn't actually make Pokemon Go. They just invested in the company that makes Pokemon Go. That was my favorite, by far.
Yeah, $15 billion to the market cap in a period of 7 days, right? And then have they lost.
That's about $5 billion in like 3 days. Like, the people that bought the top, they lost 30%. At least, if you bought, like, you know, on, you know, day three or four.
Should have shorted really that stuff, man.
Yeah.
Well, give it 3 months or a year, and let's talk about it then.
Let's do that. Rick, I want to know if you have had it installed on your phone.
Absolutely no device of any type. I have none. But I did see one of my employees doing it. I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, Pokemon Go. And I'm like, it was the most exaggerated eye roll ever. Oh, so no.
Do you know what I think would be really hot, though? And this is, I think, something that Pokemon Go is laying the groundwork for, is if you did have something like, you know, some glasses or something that was easily wearable that would create an augmented reality experience, and you could actually overlay anything from, you know, from another world to a Dungeons & Dragons scenario to anything you could think of over the real world. And actually have some interactive play, where you didn't, you know, look like a complete and total idiot as you were walking through a park or something, then I think there's a tremendous upside for the potential of this augmented reality type of infrastructure. And then the people who have adopted it have definitely shown that the gamification of that is definitely very hot. But Pokemon Go itself, I think it's just a portal into, you know, a much bigger world that is going to be once, you know, one day going to be hot.
So we'll download ITWT Go next year, and then we'll do that.
You'll see a bunch of us standing around drinking beer.
I will say the difference here is the fact that Pokemon has a 20-plus year history of engagement with consumers at multiple age groups, right? And this isn't, you know, this isn't something that's just like, hey, nobody's ever heard of Pokemon, right? Pokemon's got a very long strategic history, and it was a humongous card game. You know, I mean, the stat I saw was like 1 in 10 Americans are playing Pokemon Go. 1 in 10. I mean, it's unsustainable, right? At some point, people are going to burn out a bit on it, you know. But, I mean, the fad of it, you know, and what they can do. And, you know, and the ground was set based on Niantic's earlier games on how this was done. You know, the story behind all this is the database that they created was based off another ARG game that they put out where they had 5 million Pokestop or 5 million integration points. And it was because all the guys from Google Maps got bored, right? And they spun out and created this new company to do this stuff around the data that they collected and, you know, the research they'd done around the platform that they'd built. I mean, this isn't something you could just turn on overnight. And, you know, what you did see was them have scaling issues immediately. I don't think they realized how big it was going to get either. But, you know, it's a fascinating something. It's fascinating to watch, right, happen in real time. And it is – this is different than Pet Rock and a few other things we've seen, right? It probably has a few more legs. But it does have a Pet Rock feel to it, right? The guy who made the Pet Rock made $1 million. Okay. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Let me get out my jump to conclusions, Matt.
Beanie Babies.
Cabbage Patch Kids, those things were terrifying looking.
Oh, I'm just shaking my head, guys. Oh, this is the Pokemon. Oh, the nightmares.
Yeah, people get sick of it, and people either catch enough Pokemon or realize once they caught the Pokemon that it's not actually fun going to gyms and training and battling and doing all this stuff because they don't have actual time to do anything.
But once it becomes a chore, they will leave.
Like, ah, oh, dude, I got to wash my Charizard again tonight, train him, and feed him. Damn it.